The Gary Knoll Show, daily at noon on the Progressive Radio Network.
Live from New York City, it's The Gary Knoll Show. And now, your host, Gary Knoll.
Don't play with my heart. It makes me furious.
I'd like to welcome all of you. I'm Gary Knoll. Continuing with our in-depth reporting on the subject of vaccines, because the mainstream media refuses to touch it. We have sent dozens of articles, two award-winning documentaries, Autism Made in USA, which won 50 international film festivals for official entry and wins, as well as Vaccine Nation, not a word back. Racial Maddow, not a word back. Democracy Now, not a word back. So everyone on the left, everyone on the right has said, we're not interested. All right? Well, the American public is interested because we believe that something has happened that goes against basic public health. That is, that we have been mandated without freedom of choice and without informed consent and without an open and vigorous debate to know the truth. Are vaccines safe and are they effective? We just heard from two gentlemen who have very important backgrounds in the field, Mark Blaxall and Dan Olmsted, both of whom are pro-vaccine advocates. They believe in vaccines. But they believe that we have been misguided with vaccine zealotry when it comes to autism. They believe that the tsunami of autism is a huge cost writ large to society, to families, to health funding, and to education, and that the government needs to take control of the situation but is burdened with conflicts of interest between the health fed agencies and private companies. I do not believe that will change. I believe at no time will our governmental agency, the CDC, the FDA, U.S. Public Health Service, National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Disease, all of which oversee this along with the Academy of Medicine, will never admit this, because then someone's going to have to be given a $1 trillion medical bill, and then someone's going to have to acknowledge, then why were you so certain and why did you state so voraciously that there was no connection between vaccine and autism? Then clearly you knew it. You covered it up. This is a major scandal that will never be allowed to prevail. Instead, they will continue to deny, denigrate, and attack those who offer their experiences, their expertise. In 1991, I began to hear horror stories of vets who had not gone to the vet to the war in Afghanistan, into Iraq, but were suffering from very serious illnesses. Those who had gone but hadn't fought, including those who served on ships, but came back with serious illnesses. These people had previously been in very good health. And when I looked at this, I said, well, what do they all have in common? Is there a common denominator? And of the some 300 cases I investigated, the one thing that stood out was they all had been vaccinated with experimental vaccines. Vaccines that had no long-term safety studies. Anthrax and botulism were two we knew and 12 we did not know, because the FDA was not allowing release nor the Defense Department what they were given, plus adjuvants for squalene. Other people were exposed to biological chemical warfare, others to depleted uranium, others to environmental fires, to DEET in their uniforms, etc. But these all had the vaccines in common. I might mention those same vaccines are still given to the troops today when there's absolutely no risk that they're going to be hit by any botulism or anthrax toxoids. Here is a basic question. Until this day, there has been no official acknowledgement that Gulf War syndrome exists. Even with the Rockefeller hearings and multiple hearings, they have continued to do nothing. Now, I've interviewed Congressman Shays, Republican from Connecticut, who said, we know something's wrong, but I can't get the Pentagon, the White House — at that point it was the Clinton White House — or anyone else to agree and work with us. Whether it was Democrat or Republican wanting to help the soldiers, no help came. 19 years go by. And still to this day, the government is not acknowledging that over 1 million of its soldiers are suffering from Gulf War syndrome. Now we have a whole new epidemic of post-traumatic stress disorder. These people are not being helped. If you go up on my website, you'll see recent video, and only a small percentage of video, of homeless vets living in squalor, living as if it were a third world nation with no water, electricity, medicine, or food, in little tiny tents or on the streets of our cities, 850,000, invisible to the American public because they just don't meet our, well, they don't meet our all-American patriotic rah-rah support our troops. And as I said to one of the people, has Glenn Beck or Sean Hannity or any of the people that said support our troops when you went into war, have any of them come to see you and help you now that you're out of war, served your country, and are now suffering? And the answer was no. That's a hypocrisy. Now to a larger hypocrisy. And this is where we will introduce my guest, Dr. Lawrence Palvetsky. He is a board-certified pediatrician who uses holistic approaches to pediatric medicine for children's illnesses. He is the head of a private practice clinic of holistic child health in Northport, New York, where he has become renowned for his treatment of children with autism, autistic spectrum disorders, child learning disabilities, and neurological conditions resulting from chronic medication and potential vaccine damage. He is the past president of the American Holistic Medical Association and the current president and co-founder of the Holistic Pediatric Association. And nice to have you with us today, Lawrence.
Hi, Gary. How are you? Nice to be here.
Good. Here is my initial question. Take your time. There will be no interruptions. I want you to have a form as if you are making a statement before the entire American public, Congress, the president, and the media. It is my belief that we do not have sound gold standard studies and criteria to state unequivocally that the individual and collective vaccines given to children and adults have been proven safe and effective for any given adult or any given child. And yet virtually all of our public vaccine programs are based upon the unquestioning belief that they are safe and effective, so safe and effective that they are mandated, and even in New York State now mandating that all medical personnel receive them again. That's back up again. Though we defeated it last year, it's back again now. So I'd like for you to talk to us and show us your evidence, make your best case, present at what you have to show what you consider the science to support or refute the absolute safety and efficacy of individual or collective vaccines, since they never seem to have the willingness to state that we've done enough vaccines, there must be other approaches to these conditions. The form is yours.
Thank you, Gary. I think, you know, as a medical physician, I was trained and taught to believe that vaccines were properly studied and that they're safe and they're efficacious. And I had no reason whatsoever to believe otherwise. And it wasn't until parents in my practice actually brought me the idea that there are things in vaccines and there are studies that have not been done that actually connect medical problems and health issues in kids and adults with the not only the ingredients of vaccines but the elements that are in vaccines. And I don't think any medical doctor or any proponent of vaccines wants to believe in any way, shape, or form that the vaccine science is lacking or that the vaccines actually do cause serious injury in kids. But I think the experience of many clinicians and many parents and the experience of a growing number of kids is that the vaccines are becoming more and more unsafe as we continue to increase the number of vaccines that we're giving. And again, no one wants to be able to believe that this is possible. They want to believe that all the science has been done and that science is true. And I have to be honest, and certainly as a physician, people know that what I'm about to say puts not only my career on the line but my life on the line to actually say that vaccines are not proven safe. And they have not been proven safe. And it's sort of a case of shoot first and ask questions later. There's a wonderful abstract in a study published in the Immunology and Cell Biology Journal from May, June, and July of 2009, where the authors specifically state this, quote, Although vaccination has been used for centuries, the technologies are largely empirical, with little understanding of the underlying immunological principles and physiological mechanisms. As researchers gain knowledge of these principles and regulatory authorities become more stringent in their requirements, changes in empirical approaches have become necessary. Rational vaccine design is now essential. So they've now understood that the injection of material causes an impairment in the cellular immune system and the humoral immune system and the regulatory immune systems that leads to diseases like asthma, allergies, eczema, autism, ADD, ADHD, multiple sclerosis, insulin-dependent diabetes, uveitis, juvenile rheumatoid arthritis. This is shocking science, but nobody wants to believe that this is actually going on. A scientist in the University of British Columbia, Chris Shaw, published a study in 2009 showing that the injection of aluminum into the body actually causes the production of something called tau protein. And tau protein is a pathological hallmark of various neurological diseases, including Alzheimer's and dementia. Now, we're injecting huge amounts of aluminum into kids through vaccines. And what you hear from the authorities is, well, you know, kids are breathing in and eating aluminum all the time, so I don't see what the big deal is to just inject them with a little bit of aluminum. Well, they can say that as their belief, but the science actually has never been done by the vaccine manufacturers saying, well, what happens to the body when you inject aluminum versus when you inhale it or ingest it? Now, Chris Shaw has shown that injection of aluminum causes damage to the nerves and the development of these plaques. And the question is, well, is this happening in kids as well? We don't know, but we certainly know that we're seeing a lot of children with neurological disorders. So it's not just the single ingredients, Gary, that's a problem. I mean, we heard from Mark and Dan about the problem with thimerosal. But when you combine thimerosal and aluminum together, you're going to have a greater damage on the nerve cells than if you're just giving aluminum or mercury together. And so there's really no single study that compares the injection of a single vaccine or even a single vaccine ingredient to children who receive a placebo. And the vaccine experts and the pro-vaccine pundits will say that it's unethical to leave kids vaccinated for any length of time to even have a placebo-controlled group. Well, they only really watch these kids for 2 to 3 weeks when they do the studies. And it's certainly possible to leave a group of kids unvaccinated for 2 to 3 weeks to be able to see if the health outcomes during these immediate period after vaccines is different when you vaccinate a population versus when you leave a population unvaccinated or give them a placebo. And there are plenty of kids in this country who are unvaccinated for more than 2 to 3 weeks who can be part of that placebo-controlled study group. We're taught in medical school, and researchers are taught in science, that in order to have a valid study, you need to have a study group as well as a placebo-controlled group. And any vaccine study done by the vaccine manufacturers, it does not contain a proper control group. In a science lab, in any good research study, those study designs would be thrown out. People would lose their labs immediately for not having a proper control group. But somehow, some way, the vaccine manufacturers are allowed to get away with not comparing vaccinated kids to unvaccinated kids. We have no studies actually comparing vaccinated children to unvaccinated children if we look at the health outcomes. You know, how many of the vaccinated kids have asthma, allergies, eczema, autism, ADD, ADHD, insulin-dependent diabetes versus unvaccinated kids? And there are ways to control for other pieces of the demographics, like diet and lifestyle, education of the families, and socioeconomic status. But the studies have not been done. I think what we're seeing is what people would call anecdotal, but it's really experiential. What we're seeing is continuous reporting of families in the hundreds of thousands, if not in the millions, not only in this country but all over the world. Their children were fine, and they got vaccinated, and then they developed X disease, or they developed X disease within a couple of weeks, or X disease within a couple of months. And every single time, the experts, because they hold the power and because they hold the money, will tell these parents universally, it's a coincidence, it's a coincidence, it's a coincidence. And I think it's really, again, going back to my initial statement, it's really, really hard for us to acknowledge that an intervention which is supposed to save lives and protect against disease may actually be doing the opposite.
Okay,
and
let's look, I'll
stop there for a second.
Okay, let us go now to a more fundamental issue, and that is that we have been led to believe that vaccination equals immunization, and therefore to enhance your immunity against a given pathogen, you must take into the body a small amount of that. So you'll take in a small amount of typhoid or a small amount of pertussis, a small amount of chickenpox, and that will stimulate the immune system, which will then create permanent antibodies. And yet time and again, when we look at the actual science, we cannot find that there is one common standard that which all could apply, that if you are given this vaccine, you are protected for life. In fact, I have seen recently where people who were given a particular vaccine ended up with massive amounts of herpes and viruses, and that now they have the herpes virus manifesting in different ways, some as shingles and some as other outbreaks. And yet these people would have had no other normal exposure to this. We're also shown that people who had all their vaccine full schedule for measles got a worse case of measles. Those who had who were vaccinated for whooping cough got a worse form of it. Those with chickenpox got a worse form of it. So if you have so many anomalies in so many different areas, then by what measure do you say that the vaccine provides the immunological model that one size fits all? Because a child of 20 pounds and an adult of 400 pounds will be given the same identical vaccine and the same amount of that vaccine. And if a child has had other diseases, that the adult has had cancer or mental illness or heart disease, they'll be given the same diseases. Yet when they're doing the studies, those same people who have had pre-existing conditions will be excluded from participating in the studies, which means that the study itself is biased. As you said, they'd be thrown out. So I would like for you to talk about immunization, natural immunization, versus synthetic immunization, and the science, or the supposed science behind this, and also even go back to William Jenner, the father vaccine, and take an honest look at his own child who died, and Phipps who died, the boy who was supposed to be the boy wonder that proved that the cowpox prevented a smallpox, and take us on this historical journey.
Okay. Well, I think it's pretty clear in the literature that vaccination does not equal immunization. And unfortunately, people have been led to believe that if you have an antibody through vaccination, that you are actually protected as if you were to have had the disease naturally. And that's the flaw in the vaccine science. The old belief is that vaccines mimic natural infection. And the new understanding is actually that the presence of an antibody is not sufficient to ensure clinical protection after administering some vaccines and toxoids. And this last statement that I just stated, the presence of antibodies alone is not sufficient to ensure clinical protection after administering some vaccines and toxoids, is verbatim out of Nelson's textbook of pediatrics. This is the Bible of pediatric training. So it's understood that just because you have an antibody, it doesn't give you a full understanding of how the immune system works and all the steps that happen in an immune system before an antibody is produced. So we're, our old science says if you give a little bit of an injection of material and you produce an antibody, you're going to be protected. The new science, which is, you know, based also on that study that I read to you in Immunology and Cell Biology Journal, is that producing an antibody is not necessarily sufficient to protect us against disease. The other unfortunate old science is that if you haven't yet been sick from a disease, if you don't have measles, if you don't have chickenpox, if you don't have pertussis, then you couldn't be exposed to it yet. And the idea is that if you give a vaccine, you are then presenting the antigen, the bacteria or the virus, to the person in case they would eventually be exposed to those bacteria or viruses. That's the old science. Well, the new science actually shows us that you can never prove that exposure didn't happen, even if somebody isn't sick. And so the old thinking is, if you're exposed, you'll get sick, but if you're not exposed, you won't get sick. And the bottom line is that we're exposed to trillions of microorganisms every single day, trillions of bacteria that line our bodies, that line our airways, our intestines, our skin, and we only vaccinate kids against 21 of them. And so medical science somehow has led people to believe that because you're not sick from these 21, you couldn't have been exposed, so we're going to inject them into you, which will then give you the exposure and protect you. And what we're learning is most people are already exposed to these bacteria, but yet they're not sick from them because the body doesn't see them as an enemy. And there's a reason the body doesn't see them as an enemy, is because they serve a function in the body. Similarly, we're now learning through the Human Genome Project that almost 43% of the genetic code is made up of viruses and viral-like particles. So there are thousands of viruses already living inside our bodies, and they all serve a function. They help transcribe proteins, they perform metabolic processes, they help protect the cell defenses in the body, and yet we're replicating viruses in our body all the time. And what people used to think is that viral illnesses will lead to death. And in fact, we're now learning more and more that viral illnesses actually play a role in keeping us healthy. So while we're suppressing all these viral illnesses in kids, we are creating the chronic illnesses that we see because we never allow the natural evolution of the DNA to express itself so that the DNA can go forward. There's plenty of science out there that tells us that injecting these viruses and bacteria, which already may be in the body, can lead to something called molecular mimicry, which is the body will then see material that it already has believed is friendly and now see it as foreign and cause autoimmune diseases. We are filled with autoimmune diseases in our population, Gary. It doesn't take a rocket science to understand that we're increasing autoimmunity in leaps and bounds, and the possibility that vaccines can play a role through molecular mimicry is huge because we're injecting bacteria and viruses, we're injecting egg protein and milk protein and peanut protein and gluten protein and corn protein and soy protein into the body. The body is seeing it as foreign, creating a reaction against it, and then when the body sees it as a friendly ingestion or inhalation, we reject it, and we start to create allergies, asthma, and autoimmunity. The model is perfectly sound, it's scientific, and people are turning their backs to the possibility of it.
Let's also look at two other areas, if you would, please. One, we have never proven that as a cumulative mixture, the different ingredients in vaccines are safe for a given individual. To the contrary, whether it's formaldehyde or thimerosal or aluminum or even the contaminated DNA, that these are assumed to be safe. Tell us about what you know of the ingredients in vaccines and what they can do in a non-differentiated immune system. A baby's just born. It hasn't really developed its full immunity yet and won't for several years. And yet we're taking an amount of a toxoid, amounts of bacteria and viruses that they would never normally come into contact with through their blood directly, and putting them directly into the bloodstream, and then wonder why we end up with the adverse reactions. Tell us about that.
Well, it's pretty clear that aluminum in any form is a neurotoxin. It's also clear that thimerosal with organic mercury in any form is a toxin. It's clear that formaldehyde is a neurotoxin. It's clear that if you inject materials from the vaccines, like polysorbate 80, which is a chemical that enhances the delivery of material from the blood across the blood-brain barrier, that this is a potential for toxicity also because it can lead to infertility in animal models. that these chemicals in and of themselves are toxic in the lab. What's even a greater concern is that babies don't have a protective blood-brain barrier very early on. In fact, it may take up to 6 months or longer before their blood-brain barrier is starting to protect from what is in the blood to what can get in the brain. And, you know, studies are already showing that brainstem and cerebellar anatomy have been changed due to the injection of early vaccines. And unfortunately, we don't know if it's the individual ingredients themselves or if it's the actual injection of the individual ingredients or if it's the injection of the ingredients and their symbiotic or accumulative effect and how they manifest in the body. We don't know any of that. There are some primate studies which are showing that when you give primates growing from birth up through the natural vaccine schedule that we give to humans, when you give them the regular pediatric schedule, they start to develop a lot of the neurological diseases and the neurological delays that we see in humans. But they did a control group, and the control group did not have the same neurological issues. So, again, the more of the detailed science has to be done as to whether or not it's the actual individual ingredients or it's the process of vaccination itself, meaning injection of materials, which does bypass the important cellular defenses and does alter the cellular immune and humoral immune and regulatory immune systems, whether that's the answer or if the ingredients are both. We're lacking in a lot of that science. So what you see, again, is shoot first and ask questions later. And most people are afraid to discuss the things that I'm discussing. And no one wants to believe, again, that there is actually harm that we're doing. I have seen in my career hundreds of kids who are vaccinated, if not thousands of kids who are vaccinated, versus hundreds, if not thousands of kids who are unvaccinated. And somebody could slap me in the head and say, well, that's just anecdotal. But I'll tell you that far and above and beyond in any question in my mind, the unvaccinated kids are overall having healthier outcomes in their lives than the vaccinated children.
Dr. Lawrence Plavinsky, thank you very much, Lawrence, for being with us today. People can go to Lawrence's website at holisticchildhealth.com. What he is saying quite simply is, how in the world can we mandate vaccines, whether it's the flu vaccine or all medical health care practitioners in New York State, or children before they can get into a school, or a nurse before they can get into a hospital, students before they can get into high school or college, service personnel before getting into the armed forces, people who are senior citizens, and do so with the idea that we have absolute science of safety and efficacy when we clearly do not. And no one is being held personally accountable for these egregious errors. Thank you very much, Lawrence.
Thank you, Gary.
Let us now take a quick break of 20 seconds, come back with Dr. Sherry Tenpenny to complete our panel discussion today on the flu politics and vaccination, vaccine ingredients, a new ingredient that you hear about for the first time today, and why you should be very concerned. Two-hour special today. I began with a commentary on the state of our consciousness, the fact that we are, in effect, in that unusual place where we're allowing the media to do our thinking for us, where politicians and special interest groups control the day, and where the independent and progressive mind is simply rare. And we're trying to get people to awaken to these injustices. Just 2 days ago, our resident scholar, Richard Gale, and myself completed a major article on Bill Gates and what was called Death by Vaccination, where Bill Gates, the Rockefeller Foundation, the World Health Organization, took it upon themselves to spend hundreds of millions of dollars in making sure that everyone in Africa was vaccinated. The trouble is these vaccines are also birth control. And he's concerned and wants to see the population diminished by 15%. This is Bill Gates, and he has so stated as a matter of record. The Rockefeller Foundation has been doing this for decades. The question is, and I oppose this, who gave them the right to decide who should live, who should die, and who should never be born? Should this not be the right of the family, the individual? Should we have a select group of elites who decide through the stealth process of vaccines to introduce this into the poorest communities? And so this is now gone viral, and groups all over the world are picking it up. Thousands of different webs are putting it out there. It is a direct challenge to the elites of the world, and yet they control the vaccines. As Bill Gates says, quote, "I love vaccines." I'm sure you do, Bill, but not everyone shares that enthusiasm, including my next guest. Dr. Sherry Tenpenny is a medical physician who incorporates integrative medicine into her practice for treating allergies, childhood illnesses, and women's health issues. She is the executive director of the Senoviv Medical Institute and a progressive wellness hospital in Baja California. She's also one of the nation's most knowledgeable and outspoken physicians regarding the adverse impact of vaccines on public health and the medical risk to children. She has a DVD, Flu and Flu Vaccines, What's Coming Through That Needle, and it's an invaluable resource for educating people on influenza and the flu vaccine. She's also the author of two books, Fowl, Bird Flu, It Is Not What You Think, and Saying No to Vaccines, a resource guide for all ages. Nice to have you with us today.
Good morning, Gary, and thank you very much.
I'm going to be asking you to address three issues as you choose, all right?
Mm-hmm.
The first issue is, following up on my interview just now with Dr. Lawrence Pavetsky about the safety and efficacy, because many people in the vaccine movement, including Barbara Lou Fisher and others, are pro-vaccine, and some do not accept that the vaccines or thimerosal in the vaccines or other ingredients have led to autism, but they believe that otherwise vaccines are okay, though some children have had adverse effects and have not always been compensated. Then you have those who say that we've looked at the same evidence and see a correlation between vaccines and a myriad of childhood conditions on a spectrum, and we are concerned. And then we have another group, a smaller group, that is saying, if you look honestly at the scientific literature and you look for gold standards of safety and efficacy for any given child, what proof is there that a vaccine will provide both safety and efficacy for the single or multiple conditions for which they are vaccinated? I'd like your input on that. Then I would like for you to take us specifically to what they're doing to manufacture a new hysteria on the H1N1 and how they're going to incorporate the H1N1 this year into the flu vaccine, so they're not going to tell us to take two flu and two H1N1 as they did last year, but rather take your vaccine, which you're going to get all these ingredients, and I want you to go through those ingredients. The form is yours.
Okay, well, the first thing, when you laid out those three different types of scenarios in terms of safer vaccines versus maybe vaccines are okay, maybe they're not, and the third part is why would you do vaccination at all, I fall into the third category of what you laid out there, Gary, which was very eloquent. And my position is that once you know what's in the vaccines, once you look at the scientific evidence that shows how much harm that they are causing, I don't know why anyone would want to put put any of that stuff into their children's bodies. The risk of the vaccine is very high in all cases. They just manipulate the numbers to make us think that it's not. I've always, one of the things I say frequently to parents is you have control to a large degree over the health of your children. You can have them take vitamins, get them to bed on time, wash their hands, get exercise, eat good food, drink plenty of water, make sure their vitamin D levels are adequate. You have a large amount of control over how over the health of your children. You have no control over the outcome of an injection called a vaccine. And that outcome can be anything from nothing, just maybe a little sore arm where the needle was inserted, all the way up to and including a lifetime of disability and death. And it's actually just a random Russian roulette activity to know where that your child is going to fall into that. And once you vaccinate, you really can't unvaccinate. You can do things to try to restore health if you've had an adverse event, but there's no guarantee that any of those things that you do can restore your health back to the original format. I give the example, it's rather like Humpty Dumpty, where all the king's horses and all the king's men never can put Humpty Dumpty together back to their original form, as you could never really get a child back to 100% before they have a vaccine injury. So I think that knowing what's in the vaccines, knowing, really evaluating the risk of the disease versus the risk of the vaccine, in my opinion, I think that most people, if they really were educated, informed, would fall on the side of the equation of, I think I will take my risk with the illness. And when you see all of the, when you talk to parents who have had a child who perhaps has had a very bad outcome from any of the vaccines, and any of them can cause the problem, any of them, then they decide that subsequent children are not going to be vaccinated at all. And you look at the health of those unvaccinated kids, the vast majority of them rarely get sick, or if they do, it's just a cold or a flu that goes through in a couple of days. They recover substantially, and their health is so much better than the vaccinated children, that it's my belief system, my belief that the vaccines are the backbone of the pharmaceutical industry. And if we can make children sick from, we can make humans sick from the time they are children, we can turn them into customers for life of our products, our widgets called drugs, to make sure that every human being on this planet is on at least one or two pharmaceutical drugs for the rest of their life. If you have very healthy, unvaccinated children, if they're very healthy, they are not going to go down that pathway to become chronic customers of the pharmaceutical industry. Therefore, I think pharma really pushes really hard to make sure all these kids are vaccinated to fill up their pipeline for their drugs.
Okay, then let's take this to the next level. Thank you for that answer. Right now, they seem to have learned a few lessons based upon our total challenge to them by dozens of activists and educators and physicians, yourself included, last year in the H1N1. There was no pandemic. It was pure politics and profit. This year, they're looking ahead, and I can see what they're doing. I think it's very easy to see what they're doing. They're going to try to confuse the public. They already have CNN that they can always count upon never to be accurate on this reporting, and the other media, including the left. And Democracy Now! And these other programs are all pro-vaccine. And anything that you're told to do, roll up your arm and don't question, as if somehow there's no manipulation by any special interest group here. So I'd like for you to tell us the danger that we face with the politics and bad science and corporate interest with this year's flu and this year's H1N1 and what's in the ingredients and why this is problematic.
I think that you're absolutely correct when you say that last year they learned some lessons. They learned that the sleeping giant called the American uninformed public is waking up and tapping into their game. The fact that they had to burn and destroy $450 million worth of H1N1 swine flu vaccine that was produced, overproduced last year because of lack of usage, I think speaks volumes to the fact that people are saying, are looking at, why do I need to get this shot? Is it going to keep me from getting the flu? Is there more risk at getting the vaccine than getting the flu? And, oh, by the way, if I get the flu, I'll recover in a few days. What's the big deal? I actually did an analysis of the influenza viruses in circulation, because it's the CDC's claim that in order for the flu shot to work, it the three viruses that are contained within the vaccine have to generate an antibody that is an exact match or a very close match to the viruses, the influenza viruses that are out in circulation on a given year. Pardon me. There are testing centers all across the U.S. that when people get sick with influenza-like illness, the things that are like the flu, they go into these centers, and the doctors there will take a swab, a nasal swab and a throat swab, and send it to the CDC for analysis. The purpose of that analysis is to say whether or not your flu-like symptoms, everything that you have, the runny nose, the congestion, the fever, the body aches, is it being caused by an influenza virus or not? Because if it's something other than an influenza virus, the vaccine wouldn't have helped, wouldn't have protected you from getting sick anyways. So I took the data right from the CDC's website, from the weekly flu activity and surveillance reports from October of 2009 up through May of 2010, and went through every single one of those and correlated the data back through 1997. And over the last 11 years, only 14% of the time when those swabs were sent to the CDC, those swabs contain influenza virus, which means that nearly 86% of all influenza that has happened over the last 11 years was caused by some other organism, a rhinovirus, a mycoplasma, some other virus other than influenza. So that means that even if the vaccines work at all, that it will only keep you from getting sick maybe 14% of the time. And then, so the whole scenario of when people say you can get the flu shot and still get the flu, and doctors deny that that's true, that it absolutely is the truth, that you can get the flu shot and still get the flu, because 86% of the time it's going to be caused by some other organism other than the influenza virus. And I think that that's really important for people to understand. The other part is that flu shots just simply don't work. It's been shown by the Cochrane Collaboration, which is a international think tank that has evaluated every single study ever published on influenza and influenza vaccines, including 17 articles translated from Russian. And what they found was that they divided the data into three age groups: children, middle-aged adults, and senior citizens. And in all three age groups, in all three of them, getting the flu shot was no more effective than keeping you from getting the flu than a placebo, than giving you just a shot of sterile water. And so all of this stuff, all of this push to get people the flu shots, it seems as though it's just there to get them injected with things. And it really isn't going to be efficacious at all. The other lie that we hear over and over again is that there are 36,000 deaths per year caused by influenza. Again, I went back through the CDC's data, and I actually looked at a very large statistical paper that was published by the American Lung Association. And between 1999 and 2006, on average, there were 1,244 deaths per year from the flu, a far cry from 36,000, to the effect that the CDC this year has even had to retract their statement that maybe it really isn't 36,000 deaths per year from influenza. It really is somewhere between 3,300 and 49,000. And even the CDC has said that that information is absolutely irrelevant. They don't know what to do with it because it has no relevance at all in research or science. This year, what they're trying to do with the new flu vaccine, I believe that a lot of the problems with the swine flu vaccine last year had a lot to do with the ingredients. And this year, they're doing in some cases, what's called a quadrivalent vaccine, which means four viruses in the flu shot, so that you only have to get one and not two. The ingredients that are in there's eight different types of influenza vaccines on the market, eight different ones. All eight of them have different ingredients. They are different side effects, different contraindications, and I am quite sure I can say with confidence that physicians do not know the difference between the different vaccines that they're giving and which one should be given in which age group. And I find that really frightening, Gary. I think that that is something that people really need to know about.
All right, let's go into the ingredients that are in the flu vaccine, the testing for safety and efficacy, any gold standard of testing, and if you could take us through what you, as a healthcare licensed professional, would say is a challenge to those scientists at the CDC, the laboratories within the vaccine-making companies, when they say, this vaccine has been proven safe. I know what I would say. I would like to hear what you would say, especially given the ingredients they're using.
I believe that they really that the safety issue in terms of the ingredients is really problematic, because there are measurable amounts, milligram amounts, measurable amounts of ingredients in these vaccines that are causing harm. For example, one of the ingredients that's in all of the flu vaccines is formaldehyde. And it's very interesting that the National Institute of Occupational Safety and Health states that formaldehyde is immediately dangerous to life and health at 20 parts per million. All of the flu vaccines have a minimum of 50 parts per million of formaldehyde in each one of the shots. And in fact, the new high-dose Fluzone that's for senior citizens has 200 parts per million of formaldehyde. There's measurable milligram amounts of toxic chemicals, formaldehyde being one of them, that is a known carcinogen. In addition, formaldehyde is not only in the flu shot, but it's in many other vaccines, combination vaccines, including the DTP, the polio, hepatitis A, hepatitis B. They are injecting known carcinogens into us on a regular basis. Another problematic ingredient has to do with gelatin. Gelatin, like as in Jell-O, and that there's a strong relationship between gelatin injected into the body and allergic reactions, including anaphylaxis. In the flu shot, in the flu mist vaccine, that's the one that goes up the nose, there are 2,000 micrograms of gelatin in that one vaccine. And the ones that are absolutely the highest are the chickenpox vaccine, which has 12,500 micrograms of gelatin, and the MMR, which has 14,500 micrograms, so that is milligram amounts. The MMR, if you convert that, that's 14.5 milligrams. And when a bee sting or a hornet sting can sting you, they estimate that it's 2 micrograms, 2 tiny little drops, can cause you to have an anaphylactic reaction and die from a bee sting. And yet we are willing to be injected with 14,500 milligrams of gelatin. I think that that's a travesty. And one of the ones that I dug out that I've talked about in my new DVD called Flu and Flu Shots, What's Coming Through That Needle, is a chemical called sodium deoxycholate. It's a laboratory detergent that is used to separate the antigens of a virus. And there was a research paper that came out in December of 2008 that says, quote, research clearly shows that sodium deoxycholate promotes development of breast cancer tumors and promotes breast cancer metastasis both in vivo and in vitro, which means both in a petri dish and when they've done this in experimental animals. The sodium deoxycholate was in all of the H1N1 swine flu vaccines last year. It is in Flumist and Fluarix, which are two of the other flu shots in general use this year. It's also in Menimmune, which is one of the meningitis vaccines, and in hepatitis B. I find that very troubling, and people are deceived to think that thimerosal is out of all the vaccines, and it's not. Thimerosal is still in the multi-dose flu vaccines, and you get a shot from a multi-dose vial of Fluzone, Fluvel, or Afluria, you're going to get 25 micrograms of mercury injected into your body. So I always say to people, if you still think that you need to get a flu shot, if you really are determined, then at least know what's in it and ask which one the doctor is going to give you so you can make a little bit more informed choice of whether or not you even want to get mercury injected into your body.
Okay, final two questions for you.
Mm-hmm.
When you look at how sick we are as a nation, the percentages of morbid Americans, morbidly obese, those who have autoimmune diseases, lupus, arthritis, fibromyalgia, those who have heart disease, cancer, diabetes, pre-diabetic, those suffering from neurological conditions, ALS, multiple sclerosis, Parkinson's, dementia, Alzheimer's, you're dealing with almost 200 million Americans. Why is it that when they go to test a vaccine, they always exclude people with any medical precondition, yet they then turn around and say that these were tested the right way and then give it to the very people they wouldn't allow to have it if they were in a test? What does that tell us about their confidence in these vaccines? My second question is, what would you do for those individuals who would like to believe that natural immunity is more significant in helping them to stay healthy than an artificially induced immunity, and explain how natural immunity works and give us a basic protocol?
You know, those are really great questions. And the first one, it sort of just speaks for itself, is that vaccines are tested. If you read any of the vaccine literature at all in the scientific research, the study population is always people that are healthy and babies that are healthy. And the ones that are excluded are the ones that have the long list of illnesses like you just mentioned. But yet when the vaccine is approved, those are the people that it's targeted for. So it's never been tested on people with all these long list of illnesses. And in fact, this year's flu shot, you know, the doctors terrify parents, and particularly children that have asthma, which in my opinion, most of them have asthma because they were vaccinated at 2, 4, and 6 months with up to 20-some doses of 16 different vaccines by the time they're 6 months of age, and they get 40 doses by the time they start kindergarten. And all of that, in my opinion, leads to development in asthma in most of these children. And so now that they have asthma, the pediatricians and the family doctors say, oh, wow, your kids are really susceptible. We must get them the flu shot. Even though there is data and information that says that children that are asthmatic and they receive a flu shot have a statistically significant higher risk of becoming hospitalized with their asthma because they are vaccinated. And so there's just but one example of what you said. They've never been tested. Flu shots have never been tested on kids with asthma. But now that they have asthma, now we have to give them flu shots. It's just a convoluted way of thinking. And to your second question, the natural immunity, even from the flu, there was one research study that came out last year over the swine flu, the H1N1, and it showed that when people have had influenza, they develop an antibody to that virus that when they are re-exposed after having natural influenza, 97% of them do not get sick. So the whole kind of CDC scam about that we have to have these flu shots year after year after year is simply about vaccination, not about health and not about protecting anyone. And to me, the most important element for keeping you healthy over the winter is to get your vitamin D level tested, the 25-hydroxy vitamin D level. And when your doctor or the nurse calls you with information to tell you that your vitamin D level is normal, make sure you ask them for the specific number, because the range on the test will say the normal range is 20 to 100. And if your test level comes back at 30, your doctor will tell you that it's in the normal range. But that's inadequate for keeping you healthy and helping and protecting you from the flu, and for also all of the other benefits that you get from vitamin D, that your level really should be close to 80. It should be greater than 60 and preferably up around 80 nanograms per ml to keep you healthy through the winter. So getting the flu is not such a big deal. Yes, you may be sick for a couple of days, and some people say, oh, it was the worst I ever felt. But it will keep you, having that natural immunity, in my opinion, will build your resistance for all kinds of flus in the future.
Thank you very much, Dr. Sherry Tenpenny. And your website for people who'd like more information?
It's drtenpenny.com. We've got the information about the new flu DVD that we just put out. It's 2 hours long with all the information and more that Gary and I have just spoken about.
All the best to you. I look forward to our next conversation.
Thank you so much for having me, Gary. I appreciate it.
And also to Mark Blaxel and Dan Olmsted, and also to all the other people that we've been working with who helped in the preparation, and also to Dr. Lawrence Palfsky. We thank him. This will continue. This is just the beginning. On Tuesday, we will be launching a new website. It will be an information website on vaccinations. We will be able to have original information that will help you in making the choices you choose to make. It is not for me to tell someone to vaccinate or not. Rather, it is for me to show what you may not be aware of so that you are then better informed. They will make a massive campaign in the next 4 or 5 weeks. They will try to show that people, including my guests, myself, are irresponsible, that we do not have science on our side, that we are making people make imprudent choices, and that to stay on the side of good medicine and good science. Well, we are doctors, and we are scientists, and we are journalists. If you notice, everyone today had a very distinguished background and comes from places, as Dr. Palfsky said, he risks his career by taking the position he does. In my opinion, that gives him a unique position, because each one of these individuals risks their career because they become a target. They become a target just as those who stood up against genetic engineering now are a target of Blackwater, a very loathsome group that has engaged in killing innocent civilians in Iraq. So now just to speak up makes you a target, just like the people in the Fahrenheit book who read books were a target. Those who disseminate the truth are a target. But then again, what would it mean if we knew the truth and chose not to speak up, or we were indifferent to the truth and just stayed Democrats or Republicans? I'm Gary Nall. Thank you all very much for listening. Now, our next program on the Progressive Radio Network, Jim Turner of the Consuming Interest.
Produced in our New York City studios. The producer is Richard Gales. The engineer is Matt Bogart. All shows are archived by Joe Kemp. Our chief archivist is Sharon Pride, and the program director is Carol Lee.